Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
Voice of Truth is very pleased to bring you another installment of A Creation Seminar by Steve Grohman. Previously on the program, we've already played a portion of this series. Steve presents his seminar live hundreds of times each year in churches, public schools, private schools, and at a variety of other special functions. And via radio and television interviews, his voice has been heard internationally addressing this crucial topic. You can visit Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. Again, that's www.creationseminar.net. We encourage pastors, teachers, school principals, school superintendents, and any others interested in helping children learn the truth about creation and helping people to uncover the lies and deception of the religious movement known as evolution to email Steve at creation@creationseminar.net. Again, that email address is creation@creationseminar.net. What you're about to hear was recorded live in a church setting. The voice is that of Steve Grohman. He's spent the last 14-plus years on the road full-time, traveling with his wife Dana, and now with their son Paul as well, teaching about the crucial topic of creation versus evolution. As mentioned, this is a continuation of a prior portion of the series, so we'll be picking up with Steve in mid-sentence, so to speak, but you'll quickly catch on to what is being said. Let's roll the tape.
There are these things being used all over this country, all over this planet, called hyperbaric chambers. Has anybody in this room been in a hyperbaric chamber by chance? Anybody at all? I almost can't hardly believe in a crowd this size somebody hasn't been in a hyperbaric chamber. There was somebody in one just about, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. They're using it for all sorts of different injuries, athletic injuries and scuba diving accidents and all sorts of burn patients and whatnot. In fact, some of the ball teams, football, basketball, hockey, they have their own hyperbaric chamber that travels with the players. If a player gets injured, they stick them in this thing and the healing times are about half the time. Have you ever wondered why somebody gets a, you know, some ball player of some kind will get some major issue, you know? I mean, they'll rip a tendon or something. They'll have some major damage, trauma done, and then they're back on the field in just a week or two. Well, how come it takes us 6 or 7 or 8 weeks to heal like that? Folks, the healing times are incredible. We were doing a seminar in Carl, Georgia one time, and there was this fella came in. He was all messed up, and he's walking, leaning on a cane like this, you know, kind of leaning over. And after tonight, he came up to me and said, I want to talk to you for a minute. This guy was struck by lightning 2 weeks before that session, that seminar that we were at. And he said, everywhere on his body, he had metal. It blew out his body. He had eyeglasses and belt buckle, pager, and keys in his pocket. He had steel-toe boots on. Both that guy's feet, from mid-arch forward, the ball of the foot and the toes and everything, were blown off. They were gone. Not even supposed to be able to get around like that. But this guy said, you were talking about these hyperbaric chambers tonight. He said, the only reason I'm still alive today is, number one, I guess God's not done with me for some reason. And number two, I go into a hyperbaric chamber every other day, and the thing is healing me up. And there are all sorts of examples of this kind of thing. I had some oral surgery that needed to be done not too long ago, just a month ago, whatever it was. And the church we were at, there happened to be an oral surgeon there. Imagine that. Anyway, I'm telling you, God's timing is always perfect, you know. But anyway, this guy, he was telling me, he said, you know, you were talking about hyperbaric oxygen chambers and stuff. He said, when we have major reconstruction that needs to be done on somebody because of, you know, massive damage of some sort, he said, just oxygen will not do it. We use hyperbaric oxygen. He said, I always wondered what the point was that was. But you force it into the system. Folks, these bodies of ours are reproducing self-healing machines. These things are designed to last. If we will give them what they need, they will last the best that they can, and they will repair themselves and such. You force oxygen in with increased pressure, increase oxygen, your body's going to heal up a whole lot quicker than it would without it. And many examples of that kind of thing. Start watching local newspapers a little closer. You know, you'll find all sorts of articles about people with some serious major issues being treated and cured and helped along because of hyperbaric chambers. Well, again, what if the entire planet was this way? In the original creation, God made Adam and Eve. He did not make Adam and Eve in St. Joseph's Cardiac Center and St. Thomas Burn Ward. You know, they didn't have advanced trauma life support. They didn't have paramedic units. They didn't have ER doctors. They didn't have that stuff. You know what makes perfect sense? God built in the system, in the creation, the means to heal and take care of any problem that we could possibly come up with. But sin has entered the world. It's just gone downhill from there. But hyperbaric chambers are being used all over. Here's Carl Ball. He has Creation Evidences Museum down in Glen Rose, Texas. In fact, in his museum, he has a hyperbaric chamber, and he's raising things in there. He put some copperheads in there. They grew huge. You know, rattlesnakes, when a rattlesnake strikes you, it is injecting protein into your body. That's why it does such massive tissue damage so quickly. And he put some in a hyperbaric chamber, and the rattlesnake does not have the urge to strike because there's no buildup of this protein. There's no buildup of this stuff. He utilizes it. He gets huge, and even if it does strike, it's not poisonous at that in that kind of condition. You guys know what scorpions look like, right? Scorpions, you know, kind of cardboard thin and 1.5, 2 inches long or whatever. He put some in a hyperbaric chamber, and in a matter of just a few weeks, the things went from, instead of being cardboard thin, they went to over about 2 inches tall. Instead of being about 2 inches long, they grew to 9 inches long. The things just grew like crazy in a very short period of time. Well, do you know there is evidence of all sorts of different things all over this planet, same as today, just gigantic form, that's all. The only difference is they're huge. Well, folks, with a pre-flood world situation going on, things are living for hundreds and hundreds of years. Adam's over 900. Noah's 600 when he gets on the ark. Things are living all this time. In a perfect world, things are going to get pretty big, as a matter of fact. Anyway, all sorts of examples of hyperbaric chambers that are being used literally all over the country. And many folks are doing research on this. Well, we were doing a seminar up in Marquette, Michigan, Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And this fellow comes up to me. They're a missionary family into Africa. And he said, I'm going to find this picture, Steve. And he did. And he gave me a copy of it here. And these are his two daughters here. And they killed this reptile, big giant reptile out there in Africa. And they don't know what it is. It's not a savanna. It's not a Komodo. It's not an iguana. They don't know for sure what this thing is. But it's big. Well, he's that big today. Can you imagine this guy living in a hyperbaric chamber situation where this guy is maybe 600 or 700 or 800 or 900 years old, like some of the pre-flood people? Well, guess what? This guy's got an incredible advantage because all reptiles, grow throughout their life. If a reptile is alive, it is growing. Well, just think that through for a second. We grow for a little while and we stop growing and we continue to live our lives. Well, what if you're an animal and you are in a pre-flood situation and you are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old and you're growing every day that you're alive? How big are you going to get? Folks, you would have a dinosaur. You know the word dinosaur means terrible lizard? Richard Owen coined the term dinosaur, 1841. The first one they ever put the bones back together, they called it an iguanodon because it looked like a big, gigantic iguana. And that's probably all the thing was, a big, gigantic reptile several hundred years old. That's all. These things are just big, giant reptiles. In fact, everybody's seen these depictions, big mama, little babies here. National Geographic, May 96, ran this article. Here's baby hadrosaur leg bone. Here's mama hadrosaur leg bone. I mean, look at the size difference of that thing. The advantage is these guys grow every day that they are alive, and they're going to get pretty big. I had a lady one time say, Steve, I guess you've never known. You've never noticed this. There's a big difference between an iguana and a dinosaur. Well, let's think about it for a minute. Is there really? You see, the issue is, if this bone right here can get this big, why can't a bone that's bigger than this bone get this big? The reality is, this bone would get this big given the right conditions. If it was pre-flood instead of post-flood, that's all. It would get. It's going to grow every day of its life. It's going to live 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 hundred years. He's going to get pretty big, as a matter of fact. Hey, they were just big, gigantic reptiles before the flood. That's all. No big thing. These guys were awesome creatures. These dinosaurs were amazing animals when you think about it and get right down to it, you know? How about these Komodo dragons? These guys are still alive and well today. In fact, the Komodo weighs over 350 pounds and preys on large animals such as deer, wild boar, have been known to attack and kill humans. I mean, these big, gigantic reptiles still alive today, as a matter of fact. These Komodos, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these or not, but I mean, they're huge animals. But you know what, folks? They have little bitty babies. The difference is they grow every day of their life. If these guys are going to get 350 pounds today, how big are they going to get if they're living alongside Noah and they're 600 years old, you know? I mean, they're going to get huge. And you cannot get around that very issue. Most dinosaur eggs, even. They're only about the size of a cantaloupe, you know, a little bigger than a softball. But yet these big, gigantic animals came out of these things. Now, some eggs were big, but for the most part, a lot of them were no bigger than this little mouse thing I have in my hand here. Most of them were just about the size of a cantaloupe or smaller. And they grew to these enormous sizes because they're growing every day of their life, and they're living for hundreds and hundreds of years. Anyway, here's the flip side of the coin. Now, this is National Geographic, April 96, and these guys are mountain climbing here, which isn't so weird in and of itself. We're sort of a climbing, rappelling family. You know, we like doing this kind of stuff. In fact, people come up to our place up in New Hampshire. The first thing we do is we put them on the lean-to and let them feel what it feels like to let the rope support their body weight, you know? And then we put them over the tree fort and let them feel what it feels like for the body to totally take, you know, the weight is supported by the rope only. And then we put them on the rock wall, let them climb around and fall off, you know, and let them feel what it feels like for the rope to catch you falling. And then we just go find some place, you know, 100, 200 feet up or whatever, and we just go off the edge, you know. And it's fun. We like to do this kind of stuff. We love to do this kind of thing, as a matter of fact. But we're not even as crazy as some of these guys. Hey, check this out. Has anybody ever been up to personally see this thing? Anybody in this room seen this thing in person? By the way, anybody? No? This is the Old Man of the Mountain. The Old Man of the Mountain up in New Hampshire. It's sort of the state logo, if you will. It looks like a profile of a human face. Well, you know, about, I don't know, almost 2 years ago, I guess it's been, a little over a year and a half, he died. He fell right off the mountainside. Just boosh, the thing's gone now, you know. Well, we couldn't resist, you know. Now, you see where these arrows are right here and where these stones are piled up here? Well, we had to go up and see what's going on. And anyway, where these things are, this thing, I mean, here's the highway out here. This thing is like way up there, you know. And these big, gigantic steel cables and bars and turnbuckles and everything, they're all over the place up there. And I mean, here's the highway out here. Here's an 18-wheeler right there, as a matter of fact. It's just, whoosh, it's just all gone now, you know. The whole thing just fell right off the face of the thing. It was absolutely incredible. But anyway, we like doing this kind of stuff too, you know. We do this thing, but we're not as crazy as these other guys are, that's for sure. Now check this out. This little white dot right there is, at nighttime, it's a reflection of the headlamp here, but at 19,500 feet up, they're in their hanging camp at 19,500 feet. Now, when you're climbing along and you know, you're getting tired and you can't make it, it's getting dark on you, you know, you can't finish up, you can't get down. You just drive an anchor in the ground there in the side and hang off in this thing called a portal ledge. And it's just a shelf, you know, just a shelf that you hang off on a rope on the thing. Now, if you want to be up at 19,500 feet, just kind of hanging on a rope in a little tent, go to bed for the night, so be it. But I would kind of strongly urge don't sleepwalk that night, you know. That first step out in the morning, it's a doozy, you know. You need to remember where you are. Hey, we were at Zion. This is really cool. We could hear these guys yelling back and forth at each other in this big mountain over there. And we finally saw them, and you really can't see them. I mean, it's right there and right there. We blew the picture up as best we could until you couldn't see it. It'd be too fuzzy. But there's a guy right there and a guy right there just climbing up, and it's nighttime. And so it's time to bed down for the night. So you just kind of hang there and finish in the morning, you know. But we're not as crazy as these folks. Now, check this out. Back to National Geographic. The article is talking about this guy's bloody hands. You know, sometimes you get kind of beat up, but you don't let go. Anyway, but like it says here, they never healed at the high altitude. See, folks, just the way if you increase pressure, you heal up quicker because the body is being forced with oxygen and increased pressure and such to heal quicker. If you decrease that pressure, you don't heal up at all. Well, again, what if the entire world was built that way? So, folks, God made this place to last. He made this place to last. And our bodies and such to last and to continue on and to reproduce and to heal and so on and so forth. And it's just all messed up now. But the point is still the same. Many experiments have been done with these things. We were doing a seminar one time, and this fellow comes up to me and he showed me his hand, and it was a mess. This guy, it was ugly. And this guy said, he said, check this out. Did you see that? I said, yeah. This guy's in the Navy, or he was. He was in a submarine for extended downtime. He said, when we go down for extended periods, what they do is they reduce the oxygen percentage and they reduce the pressure just slightly, so the guys stay just a little bit, well, in fact, a lot of them sleep more. They don't want them hyper and claustrophobic and all that stuff, so they just mellow them out just a little bit by reducing the oxygen and reducing the pressure. He said, and he got a nasty cut on his hand and it never healed, never attempted to heal. So finally, when it did heal, it was a mess. There are many examples. In fact, I've talked to now three different people who have been on subs in charge of the atmospheric conditions in the sub, and they say the same thing. Yep, we reduce that stuff just a bit, just to keep the folks just a little bit groggy, you know. But in fact, National Geographic's done many articles on this kind of thing, the different experiments on it. But the point is, in a nutshell, increase pressure and oxygen, you heal quicker. Decrease that stuff, you won't heal up at all. Well, what if the whole world was built that way? Hey, here's an example of something interesting. This is a young lady standing here, and you see the fence right here, some bleachers back in here. And right back here is a cherry tomato plant. The thing's huge. In 1985, when the picture was taken, the thing was 8 years old, 16 foot tall, producing over 900 tomatoes. A single cherry tomato plant. I understand the thing grew to 30 feet before finally it died, and producing thousands of tomatoes. Well, folks, there are examples of gigantic vegetation literally all over this planet. How did it get there? How did it get here? What's it doing? They found a 90-foot plum tree with green leaves and ripe fruits on its branches 600 miles north of the Arctic Circle. What is a 90-foot plum tree doing anywhere on this planet, much less 600 miles north of the Arctic Circle? Folks, again, that verifies something was different. You have all that massive increase of plant material and plant life growing in gigantic form. What does a plant produce? Oxygen. You're going to have increased oxygen literally all over the world. Folks, the evidence, the mechanism is on our side. Like I showed out of that textbook, they say, as far as evolution is concerned, they don't have a mechanism for anything. Folks, we've got the mechanism for everything. What the Bible says, the evidence is out there for everybody to see. It's amazing. Anyway, how about this? Oxygen reached an estimated 35% of the atmosphere compared to the present value of 21%. There is a way that they know that oxygen at one time on this planet was at about 35%. And the way they know that is by looking at amber. Amber is fossil tree sap. Steven Spielberg made that stuff famous with his Jurassic Park series, you know. Amber is fossil tree sap. These pieces, they're all out in the museum out there. You could go take a look later if you want. But this particular piece is interesting because it has 11 little bugs neatly trapped in there. All of them have bugs in them, as a matter of fact. But this one has 11 of them in there, and it's got a really neat feature because you can see the swirling effect right here, and then right there is a little air pocket. They have been able to go in and analyze the air bubble bits in amber, and every time they analyze this stuff, it comes up about 50% more oxygen than today. Folks, at one time on this planet, oxygen was sitting at about 35% instead of the little over 20 like we have today. And the evidence is there, and the evidence is on our side, as a matter of fact. Perfectly preserves just whatever it catches, at just as well as it does the atmosphere at that time. That's all. And with a layer of water surrounding this earth, now think about it, layer of water will filter out the harmful effects that wreak havoc on our bodies today. Today we get x-rays and gamma rays and UV rays and things. They come down and the cosmic radiation and such just wreak havoc on us today. But with a layer of water surrounding this earth, they did not get that in the original creation. They didn't have those issues, as a matter of fact. They're living for hundreds of years, and they're probably getting pretty tall, too. Look at this guy. This is a pastor we met up in the UP of Michigan. This guy's huge, man. Pre-flood standards? Probably not so big. Kind of a small fella. Hey, how about Robert Wadlow? Robert Wadlow was 8 foot 11 inches tall. Can you imagine being 8'11"? I mean, Robert Wadlow was a huge fella, as a matter of fact. Well, now, Robert Wadlow at the time, I mean, 8'11", that might just been a normal person, as a matter of fact. Nothing super extraordinary about that. Giant folks have been on this planet, and there are even larger giant folks have been found in the fossil record. Huge, huge people have been found in the fossil record. They found a 9-foot, 8-inch skeleton in Indiana. They found another one in Nevada. There was one found in Ohio. There were literally all over the place. Can you imagine being that big? I mean, here's a femur to a person that would be a 12-foot tall person. I mean, can you imagine living and being 12 foot tall? Can you imagine the school desk you'd have to use and for your school? I mean, can you imagine the comb you'd have to have and the clothes you'd have to wear? And I mean, think of, hey, could you imagine a pre-flood candy bar, you know? That'd be good. That'd be tasty, you know? I'd like to have one of those guys. But anyway, giant skeletons have been found literally all over the world. Giant finger bones and thumb bones and human bones. Here's a normal finger bone you have in your hand. Here's one that was found in Texas, as a matter of fact. This other one, thumb bone, found in the mountains of Ararat. Giant stuff, literally all over the world. Patagonia means Bigfoot, by the way. But there have been 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-foot human skeletons that have been found literally all over the world. And again, if everybody is living for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in a perfect world, it would account for that kind of thing. We have the mechanism to account for the finds literally all over the world. You know, God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Mankind is made in the image and likeness of God. Now, just let that settle in for a second. There are some beautiful animals out there, but folks, they are not made in the image and likeness of God. Mankind is. Now, look, we are not just a highly evolved animal that happened to make it along. That's not possible. If that's true, and it is, then that leaves no room for cavemen. This whole concept. Folks, if they mean half man, half monkey, living in a cave, that's ridiculous. There's no such thing. Now, if they mean people that live in a cave, that's no big deal. As a matter of fact, there are still people on this planet today that live in caves. So that's no big thing. I mean, come on. But they're not half man, half monkey. They're just people that live in caves. That's all. It's not that big a deal. They're cavemen in the Bible. Genesis 19 talks about Lot dwelling in a cave. There are several people that dwelt in a cave. Just because there's evidence that somebody lived in a cave for a while and maybe cooked some food there, that does not mean they're half man, half monkey. That's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with that. But that's not what the textbooks say. They say the gorillas and chimps and orangutans and monkeys and apes and people were all just one big happy family together. Well, folks, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. Anybody can believe that, but that's not science. And people say, but what about these Stone Age tools? I mean, come on, that's prehistoric man that used those things, right? No, it shows intelligence to make some of those kind of things in the first place, but those kind of things are still used today. That's no big thing. You can drive down your neighborhood and go find yourself a Walgreens and notice what their logo is, you know. And there are a lot of different pharmacies that even have this thing still. It's not that big of an issue. It's not a caveman thing, you know, but that's the way it's presented. How about this? Look at this thing. This orangutan in a Milwaukee zoo uses its opposable thumb to hold the apple it is eating. This and its upright posture link it to humans. Now, wait a minute. Because this guy can stand up and eat an apple, he's my brother. No, it would take a little more than that, I would think. You know, there are people that think this is their family tree right here, you know. They can think that if they want to, but folks, that's not science. And this is serious. They are working on a Bill of Rights for apes, as a matter of fact. And this is serious. The Great Ape Project is called. The message is clear. Because they are so close in evolutionary terms to humans, great apes deserve the same moral status. They must be regarded under law as persons rather than property. Folks, evolution affects our laws. Evolution affects everything about a society, absolutely everything. This is serious stuff that's been going on and is continuing to go on, and they're not going to stop until they get their way. Absolutely amazing. Look at this USA Today, September 2000. Under law, pets are becoming almost human, and courts all across this country are being asked to treat pets, animals, with human status. Now, folks, think this through for a second. If evolution's true and we are just an animal that managed to evolve up, then that makes perfect sense. Because if that's true, what we ought to do is protect all those other animals and let them have their chance to become what we are or something better. But if the Bible's true and mankind is made in the image and likeness of God and we're not just a highly evolved animal, that's ridiculous then. You can't have it both ways, man. That does not make any sense if, in fact, if the Bible's true. And the Bible is true, that's ridiculous. But folks, evolution affects our laws. It is a lot more than just how old is a rock or when did a dinosaur live. The issue affects everything about a society. 1857, United States Supreme Court said black people are not legal persons according to the Constitution because of the evolutionary influence that was going on in that middle to late 1800s time frame. It affects even our laws, folks. And you cannot escape that very thing. In fact, look at who are these people anyway? Look at this thing. You go to any newsstand any day and you can find these kinds of magazine covers, you know? Well, wait a minute. Who are these people? Well, let's take a look at the inside and let's just see what we have here. And I'm going to zoom up this section right here one more time. And, well, looky there. The Walt Disney Company. Have you ever wondered why the latest kids' video release will say the same thing as a college textbook, that'll say the same thing as a museum display, that says the same thing as a high school book, that says the same thing as a local state park down the road? Folks, it is all the same people, same ideas, same mindset. But you know what they do? They package it in kids' forms to attract kids. They package it in adult form to attract the adults. They package it in education form to attract the education crowd. But it's still the same lie. They can package it however they want to, as many times they want. It's still not true. That's just ridiculous. But nevertheless, hey, check this out. They found a partial portion of a toothless Neanderthal jaw section. Now check this out. Let me read a little bit of this. It says the partial jaw, dated at between about 169,000 and 191,000 years old, contains extensive bone damage and loss. It belonged to an adult who survived for at least 6 months while being virtually unable to chew food. Excuse me, wait just a second. You can't get the timing down any closer than about 20,000 years, but you know it couldn't eat for 6 months? I don't think so. Right. Hey, how about Lucy? Lucy's in all the textbooks today. Lucy, I have Donald Johanson's book, Lucy, The Beginnings of Humankind. Donald Johanson found a 3-foot, remember that for a little bit, a 3-foot chimpanzee. And he says, it's true, it's a chimp, but he's trying to evolve into a human. How do you know that, Donald? He says, well, you see, you can learn a lot by studying the extremities of something. For instance, a human knee joint is a pretty heavy-duty structure. Well, a monkey knee joint's kind of a wimpy old structure. Well, Lucy is more dense than the monkey, but not as dense as the human. Not near as dense as Donald Johanson. But anyway, now wait just a second. Do bigger bones mean you're evolving into something else? That's ridiculous. Come on, now think about this for a second. Look, there are some really, really big horses. There's some really, really little bitty horses. Hey, I wonder if the big one's evolving into a Humvee or something. That's going to be kind of cool, isn't it? I mean, look, there are people in this room with bigger bones than other people in this room. We are still people in this room. We're not going to turn into something else. We didn't come from something else, you know? Another thing, he says that the femur, the human femur, has an angle to it. Your femur makes the top part of your knee here, and it comes out to hook into your hip. If you were to take that bone out, lay it on a table, that would hurt. Well, while you're in pretty serious pain, you would notice that the thing has an angle to it, okay? Well, the monkey's a straight-legged femured animal. Lucy has the angle to her femur, much like a human. So his conclusion is Lucy used to walk on all fours. She's slowly trying to come upright. You reach a point where you get kind of hung up. So what he says is the hip widens. That would therefore throw the femurs out so then they could swing forward, you know? And, well, yeah, you could sort of see that maybe in your mind's eye. You could see how that would maybe be, except for a little bit of a problem. He's been challenged on this many times. Do you know that ground-dwelling monkeys have straight-legged femurs? They're straight-legged femured animals. Monkeys that climb trees have angled femurs. He intentionally chose a ground-dwelling monkey to set up a series of photographs to make it look like something's happening that's not really happening at all. That's outright deception and fraud, and he knows it, as a matter of fact. And not only that, they found the leg bones 200 feet beneath the surface in a complete different layer of strata. They found the head bones a mile and a half away from those leg bones. A mile and a half away. And they put all this stuff together and made one Lucy out of this thing. One evidence, one animal out of this thing. Well, I mean, a mile and a half spread there. You know, I'm kind of curious, Donald. How fast do you think the train was going that hit that chimp? Knocked the thing a mile and a half, you know? I mean, come on. Folks, that's not science, but that's what they do. It is absolutely amazing. You know, Nova, the TV series Nova, they sent a film crew down into Donald Johanson's studio. And he actually showed how they made a plaster mold out of Lucy's hip, and then they took it on a grinding wheel and reshaped it to give it an upright posture. And then he came out and said the case of our earliest ancestor walking upright was growing stronger. Well, duh, you just manufactured your own evidence, you know? But that's what a lot of times they do. And then they call that evidence. It's amazing. You know, they find these scraps of bones. Now, they have to find scraps of bones because they're on government grant money. We have given them money to go find some bones. If they don't find some bones, they can't come back and get some more money. So they have to find some bones to get some more money, to find some more bones to get some more money, to find some more bones to get some more money. It's a self-feeding circle. They have to come up with something. But wait a second, that doesn't mean what they find is necessarily legit or true or real or whatever. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. You know, a lot of times they just find little, that's actually a lot as a matter of fact, but a lot of times it's just a small smattering of bones and they make this new something out of it. Have you ever noticed the newest find, it's always the biggest, the baddest, the fastest, the slowest, the tallest, the firstest, the meat-eatingest, the somethingest, you know? I mean, it's always something super-duper special, isn't it, that makes the big news? Well, sure, there are a lot of people digging for bones and a lot of people that are finding bones. You realize, unless you find something really special, you're not really famous. As a matter of fact, Donald Johanson even talks about this. He said, I went from total obscurity to world limelight literally overnight. And people kind of like that, as a matter of fact. And it's sad, but that doesn't make it what they find true. That doesn't make it real. You know, check this out. Everybody ought to grab a copy of National Geographic, December 2000. Very famous Triceratops dinosaur. As a matter of fact, it's been on display for over almost 100 years. Millions upon millions of people.
We'll be hearing more from creation science evangelist Steve Grohman as we play for our listening audience the audio from A Creation Seminar. Listen for it next week. Also, we encourage you to log on to Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. Make a note and check it out before our next broadcast, www.creationseminar.net.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.